So to celebrate the 250th anniversary of our country, 1776, the signing of the document declaring our independence from Great Britain to today, 2026, the Trump administration has created a state's fairground at the National Mall. Going for 2 weeks, June 25th to July 10th, you can get all the information at the site, freedom250.org. And of course, I had to be there to support the country and also learn from the event. After all, 250 years comes around only once. And we all appreciate that the current administration has put this together and has even placed on the website an admonition to pray for our country. Reflect, give thanks, and renew our shared commitment to faith and freedom. And also on the website, Washington's Prayer for the Nation in 1783. And notice that the website is not freedom250.gov, but freedom250.org. This event is a nonprofit organization launched by the White House to host this event at the Capitol. And I'm sure you know why the current administration did not have the government sponsor this event. Because if this was the government, the doors would have to be open to every radical organization, LGBTQ sponsors, Planned Parenthood, communists, globalists, global warming alarmists, DEI organizations, and every false religion. It would be one big ecumenical pagan festival. When I went into the tent called Faith and Family, I noticed that there were only conservative evangelical groups. And I expected that if they were to open a tent called Faith and Family, every religious group would claim a spot. So I asked one of the sponsors about this, and he said it was by invitation only. So let's thank God for the administration being on the conservative right. It makes a big difference in the testimony and the legacy of our country. Could you imagine a celebration if Kamala Harris was in charge of the nation, where the Democrats want to fundamentally remake America? But I'm getting ahead of myself. For those of you who haven't been to D.C. for some time, let me just describe the layout. In the middle of the Capitol complex, there is an open grass field called the Green or the National Mall. The Washington Monument is at one end and the Capitol at the other. The White House is to the northwest. The state's fairground in the National Mall was fenced off with a 10-foot mesh fence. And the government must have spent a huge fortune fencing off the area. There were only four entry points, 12th Street and 7th Street on the north and the south. The entire length of the closed-off area was 1 mile long. I parked at the Ronald Reagan Building, and that was a half-mile walk just to get to the 12th Street entrance. On Friday, July 3rd, it was 102 degrees. And the lines to get into the state's fair was so long, there was no way I was going to wait in that line. The line was at least a mile long. So instead, I spent the day touring the nice, cool Museum of Natural History, the Museum of American History, and the Museum of Art. Well worth the trip. But still, there was a lot of walking because of road and sidewalk closures. I estimated that I walked 15 miles my first day, and 10 miles my second day. On Friday afternoon at 1 p.m., they closed down the fair and sent everyone out because it was so hot. There were quite a few medical episodes, but they opened it up again after 5 p.m., only to again put people in lines waiting to get in. And that made for a worse health hazard than if the people were allowed to stay in the fair, because there are plenty of trees to sit under and air-conditioned tents. Then to have them leave and then wait in line to come back in again. The next day, because of the heat, they didn't open the fair until 12 p.m. rather than schedule 10 p.m., which made it worse because now people were in line during the heat of the day. What were they thinking? In the morning of July 4th at 10 p.m., there was supposed to be a reading of the Declaration of Independence at the National Archives Building. But last minute, they moved it indoors because they said it was too hot. So now there's a half-mile line to get into the building. But the building couldn't accommodate that many people. So most of the people stood in line only to be turned away. It really doesn't take very long to read the Declaration of Independence. 10 minutes at the most. As planned, someone could have come out and read the declarations of the crowd on Constitution Avenue, and that would have been a whole lot better for everyone. On Saturday, since the fair was not opening until later, I decided to go over to the Air and Space Museum. So starting from 14th Street North, I had to walk 1 mile west, then a quarter mile south, and half mile to the east. When I got there, the museum was closed because it was full. So I decided to go back over to the Museum of American History and hang out there. So I walked west on Independence Avenue to connect to 14th Street and back over to the north side. But the National Guard had closed off the street. Now I could see closing off the street to motor vehicle traffic, but they also closed the sidewalks. So the only way to get to the north side was to walk around the entire National Mall 2.5 miles. Now, I explained to the National Guard blocking the roadway that this doesn't make any sense. And they agreed, but they said, we're just following orders. And that's what everyone was saying. The police, the Secret Service agents, the people running the gates, they were all saying, we're just following orders. Well, I want to talk to this person who was making the orders. Later in the day, when the line died down, I got in line to go into the state's fair, about a half hour wait, and I got into a conversation with a man who's originally from El Salvador, and he talked on and on about how much he loves America. So after waiting in the hot sun, we get up to the entrance, and there's the typical empty your pockets into the bucket and walk through the scanner. The woman says to me, you can't bring a pen into the fair. I said, why not? It's not an exploding pen. She said, those are the rules. You have to throw it out in the trash can. Well, you can take a pen on an airplane, and a plastic pen doesn't work really well as a knife. I didn't even see listed in the prohibited items pens. But so what? It's a cheap pen. I wasn't going to walk back to my car and get online a second time just for a pen. But this American patriot from El Salvador behind me was carrying a small iPad, and so he wasn't allowed to enter into the fair. So he was turned away after waiting patiently in the hot sun because he wasn't going to throw away his iPad. But if he had just 2 cell phones, he could enter, and they would really be the same weight as his iPad. And the TSA even allows iPads on airplanes. So here's another typical case of a man who loves America being shafted by government bureaucrats. And this is one of the complaints everyone had that day. The National Park Service, the Secret Police, and other federal agencies deemed this event a rare national security event so that there would be a TSA airport type of screening before allowing anyone into the National Mall. But the National Mall is open to the public all week long. It's an open park. And the fair only consisted of some tents and a stage. If a terrorist still wanted to inflict chaos, there were plenty of people walking freely on Constitution and Independence Avenue. The whole area didn't need to be fenced off. And really, at the most, all they needed is to have fairgoers walk through a large scanner to detect large metal objects, rather than just belts and pens and cell phones. So not only was it very onerous to get into the fair, but once in, on July 4th at 7:30, they told everyone they had to leave the fairgrounds because a storm was coming. So they ushered hundreds of thousands of people out of the National Mall and out of the other venue, those waiting around the Washington Monument for the best view of the concert, the president's speech, and the fireworks. I got a ticket online for that event, but that didn't matter. The line was 10 persons wide, going all the way down Pennsylvania Avenue with a very slow TSA-type security check to get in, and I wasn't about to wait in that line. And this coming drizzle and the wind was a great relief from the heat, and now they're sending us out? I looked at the radar on a number of sites, and the storm was passing above and below Washington, D.C. It only sprinkled, and there was no thunder at all. And even if there was a danger, they were sending people out of the National Mall to stand in the street outside the National Mall. which was just as subject to any storm. And you think they could have waited until the storm got closer before making the call, or simply make the announcement to warn the people and give them the option to stay or go. So here's my take on this. If someone wanted to stick it to American patriots, the conservatives who made up the majority of the attendees, this is exactly what they would do to make the event miserable for the people. Now, there are three possibilities to explain this, and all three are just as bad. First, this was deliberate malfeasance, a coordinated or tacit leftist pushback by Democrat bureaucrats to resist at all cost, but to resist with plausible deniability, that they were concerned for the safety of the people. It was the storm. It was the hot weather. So let's not be naive. This kind of sabotage often happens in politics. But then, this might simply be ineptitude. Maybe some recent college graduate with a degree in event planning who feels the need to overcontrol people, like they're playing SimCity on a computer. Or third, we may attribute this to a bureaucratic mindset. If you ask the Secret Service or the mall police what to do, they are always going to over-prioritize safety over every other normal consideration, because that's what they're rewarded for, and that's what they are punished for if there are any safety problems. Now, you can put everyone in handcuffs and reduce the risk to zero, but most people are willing to deal with a certain amount of risk for freedom and convenience. But that's not how these agencies work. Also, there is the statist mindset of paternalism, where some people believe the people are children and they are the parents. Here's a definition. Paternalism is the policy or practice of interfering with a person's or a group's liberty or autonomy, justified by the claim that the person interfering is acting in the subject's own good. On July 4th at 7:30 p.m., the PA system repeated a loop message saying to leave the fairgrounds for your safety. And it sounded like something coming from a dystopian Orwellian future. So we just need to be aware of this sinful paternalism attitude, because we need to point it out when we see it in ourselves or in others. This reminds me of C.S. Lewis's Screwtape Letters, where the demons tempt people to be do-gooders under the pretext of being unselfish, when all along it's really about the person wanting control and wanting to feel important and useful. Spiritually healthy people respect other people's rights, their freedoms, their independence, allowing people to assess their own risk. But then there are the spiritually unhealthy people, the statists, who want to control others and then justify it to themselves and to others by claiming to be caring about other people's well-being. And it's even better if you can get a paycheck from the government to be this kind of a busybody. Anyway, Hanlon's razor is never a tribute to malice, that which adequately can be explained by stupidity. But given that mankind has a sinful bent, even stupidity will go in the direction of sin and malice, even if unconsciously. The reason ignorant people make life harder on others is because they have a sinful bent. You want a verse for that? Luke 11:46. But Jesus said, "Woe to you lawyers as well, for you weigh down men with burdens hard to bear, while you yourselves will not even touch the burden with one of your fingers." So with the alleged storm coming, the officials wanted to cancel the entire event. But once President Trump got word of what was happening, he personally overruled their plans, and he told them to open up the doors to the mall and the Washington Monument. But this was at 9:45 at night, and they slow walked, letting people back in, keeping closed at least half of the entrances. So most of the people had to watch from nearby sidewalks and roads. So my big takeaway from this event is that this is just another example of the scourge of bureaucratic statism. Yes, there were many good patriots in attendance, but again, they were being abused by the system, being abused by the same people we declared independence from 250 years ago. They still exist. like King George of England said about the colonists, that these rebellious children will regret the hour they cast off obedience to his control. Another takeaway from the event is that the people in attendance tended to have a Christian orientation, at the very least, theistic. These people are the salt of our nation, preserving its basic Christian heritage. And patriotism for America is founded only comes from people with a Christian worldview. Patriotism is a virtue of godliness because only Christians honor the state as an institution established by God. It's not blind patriotism or racist nationalism, though that can always be found in some people. But for the true Christian, it's a respect and thankfulness for what God has wrought in the establishment of this nation. Now, what was discouraging is that with the faith comes wolves in sheep's clothing. There are immature Christians and worldly Christians and Pharisees. Outside the mall, the Seventh-day Adventists were passing out their books as usual. The Great Controversy by their founder, Ellen White, 1858, in which she gives all of her prophecies about the future, inserting many biblical texts out of context. There was also a Baptist group screaming at the audience, saying that they were all going to hell and they need to repent of their false doctrine and immorality. And the crowd was booing them. But I'm sure these zealots were justifying their actions with some verses of scripture supporting their claims, but they weren't approaching sinners the way Jesus did in the Gospels. And they also had the wrong emphasis. And hence they were doing more harm than good. As Paul wrote to the Philippians, some preach Christ out of envy and strife, even out of self-righteousness and pride. Now inside the mall, there was the Faith and Freedom tent. Inside, some sound evangelical groups were represented. But off to the side, there was also a worship tent put up by some charismatic group. There was a not-so-good praise band playing, and they were waving banners, and there was a swimming pool set up for those who wanted to be baptized. And it didn't appear to be well done or well received. If I had the foresight, I should have set up a small venue where I would dress up like George Whitefield and do some dramatic readings of one of his sermons. There would be a historic aspect to it. It would be in keeping with the festivities, but it'd also be a great way to present our Christian heritage and the gospel. But I often think of these things after the fact, because I often don't see what needs to be done until I arrive. Well, maybe in the future, I could do this at another national historic event. Finally, another lesson is the left's opposition to this event. And I'm sure you've read many of the stories. Some states didn't even set up booths representing their states because they oppose the Republicans and Trump. And they didn't want to participate in anything done by the current administration. Again, the motto is resist at all cost. And it's really no surprise that ungodly people would hold our nation in contempt. We see this clearly in Romans chapter 1, that the nature of the unsaved is to be ungrateful and unthankful. So what we're seeing in the left's contempt for the 250th celebration of America is just an outgrowth of this lost condition. As is often said, rather than seeing the glass as half full, they see it half empty. And they look for all the faults, real or perceived. And they want to frame American history through the lens of colonialism and oppression and victimhood, all the while ignoring stories of American achievement. Yet these people live in the most wealthy, the most fair, the most free, the most just society that has ever existed on planet Earth. And yet these people complain as if they're living in Nigeria or Somalia. But this is the nature of bitter, envious, hateful people. Now, the most visible manifestation of this hatred are the recent stories of radicals who tried to destroy the renovated reflecting pool, throwing in fertilizer so algae would grow, ripping out pieces of the liner. George Stephanopoulos with ABC was interviewing the Secretary of Interior, Doug Burgum, and Stephanopoulos repeatedly claimed that the renovations were a failure and denied that the Trump administration had fixed anything. All the while, Stephanopoulos ignored the vandalism and destruction of the pool's lining. So Burgum had to correct this narrative that the media was pushing. Quote, let's put this all in context. Under President Trump's leadership, in Washington, D.C., we fixed 48 monuments, 22 fountains that hadn't had water going for years. We eliminated 1,000 graffiti sites. All of these things have been going on across the city. And you know everyone that lives in Washington, D.C. says the place has never looked better. Trump spent $15 million to fix the reflecting pool, and it's repaired. Barack Obama spent $34 million to do the same thing, and it was never repaired. Unquote. Now let's do a Bible study. There was a time in Israel's history where the ungodly wanted to prevent a national holiday and celebration. The Passover, in the spring, was to be the beginning of days for the nation of Israel. This nation God himself established to represent himself to the world. Exodus chapter 12, this month shall be the beginning of months for you. It is to be the first month of the year to you. Deuteronomy 16, observe the month Abib and celebrate the Passover to the Lord your God, for in the month Abib, the Lord your God brought you out of Egypt by night. And the history of Israel was dated from that moment, as in 1 Kings chapter 6, verse 1. The temple was dated as being built 480 years after the Exodus. Now, there are three holy days, holy weeks, in which all of the Israelites were to come to Jerusalem. Exodus 23, 17, three times a year, your male shall appear before the Lord your God. Deuteronomy 16, 16, three times in a year, all of your male shall appear before the Lord your God in the place which he chooses, at the Feast of Unleavened Bread, which is the Passover, and at the Feast of Weeks, Pentecost, and at the Feast of Booths, Tabernacle. And they shall not appear before the Lord empty-handed. Now this, of course, was to remind the people of the priority of worship. Notice that the national celebrations were to be for worship and thanksgiving to God, not just an excuse to get off of work and have a barbecue. And God actually established more vacation time for the Jews than was practiced by any pagan nation. Not only 3 weeks off at Passover, Pentecost, and Tabernacles, but also the Sabbath rest on the first day of every week, and then the land was to rest for a seven-year sabbatical. Well, wouldn't that produce laziness and poverty? No, because God told the people, if they put him first, he would bless and protect them. That is, if they took the time to obey his holy days and Sabbaths. Exodus 34, no man shall covet your land when you go up three times a year to appear before the Lord your God. Leviticus 25, then I will also order my blessing for you in the sixth year, that it will bring forth crops for 3 years. And so what we see here is that maintaining godly values in a country are worth every sacrifice and expense. Because if a people lose their godly values, their wealth and productivity will collapse. Wealth is, first of all, a function of godly character, not the amount of time you can put into it. Anyway, there is another purpose in these annual gatherings in Jerusalem. It was to keep the people unified. It gave them a sense of brotherhood and national unity. So it was important that the people got together to celebrate God and the nation. But when the unprincipled, ungodly political leader Jeroboam split the kingdom of Israel into northern Israel and southern Israel, the first thing he did was cancel people going to Jerusalem to celebrate. He couldn't allow people to celebrate their history if he was going to fundamentally remake the nation. 1 Kings 12. Then Jeroboam built Shechem in the hill country of Ephraim and lived there. And he went out from there and built Penuel. And Jeroboam said in his heart, now the kingdom will return to the house of David. If this people go up to sacrifice in the house of the Lord at Jerusalem, then the hearts of the people will return to their Lord, even to Rehoboam, king of Judah, and they will kill me and return to Rehoboam, king of Judah. So the king consulted and made two golden calves, and he said to them, it is too much for you to go up to Jerusalem. Behold your gods, O Israel, that brought you up from the land of Egypt. And he set one in Bethel, and the other he put in Dan. Now this thing became a sin, for the people went to worship before the one as far as Dan. And he made houses on high places, and made priests from all of the people who are not of the sons of Levi. Jeroboam instituted a feast in the eighth month on the 15th day of the month, like the feast, which is in Judah. And he went up to the altar. Thus he did in Bethel, sacrificing to the calves, which he had made. And he stationed in Bethel the priests of the high places, which he had made. Then he went up to the altar, which he had made in Bethel on the 15th day of the eighth month, even in a month which he had devised in his own heart. And he instituted a feast for the sons of Israel and went up to the altar to burn incense. Unquote. So notice that his objective is his own power, to establish a rival kingdom to the one God established. But with the change of location and government, he also had to create a new false religion, a different faith, a different worldview, in order to divide the country and secure for himself and his constituents power. Does this sound familiar? To gain power, to create a communist secular vision, there needs to be the dismantling of American history and celebration. In Daniel chapter 7, even when the Antichrist arrives, it says he'll make alterations in times and laws. Now, it's all about power, but it's also a love for a different God and a different morality. So remember King Jeroboam, the godless king who did away with the historic national celebrations and set up his own counterfeit celebrations. In closing, when I was at the Museum of American History in celebration of the 250th anniversary, the museum took a line from the Declaration of Independence, life, liberty, and happiness. Quote, "We hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal, that they are endowed by their Creator with certain inalienable rights, that among these are life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness." The point Jefferson was making is that God gives every person the right to life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness, and the king or the state should not infringe on these rights by enslaving the people. But the National Museum phrased it as a question: how will you pursue life, liberty, and happiness? Now that you have these God-given rights, and you live in a nation that generally doesn't infringe on these rights, how are you going to use your life, liberty, and happiness? Everybody wants life, liberty, and happiness. But the big question is, where are you going to go to find it? In God or in yourself, materialism or hedonism? America is a great blessing from God. Let's use our liberty for Christ. Galatians chapter 5, verse 1, "It was for freedom that Christ set us free. Therefore, keep standing firm and do not be subject again to the yoke of slavery." Verse 13, "For you are called to freedom, brethren, only do not turn your freedom into an opportunity for the flesh, but through love, serve one another." Thanks for listening. Stand firm in the faith, and may Jesus Christ reign.